You are listening to the Cycling Podcast at the Tour de France, in association with Rafa, celebrating the sport and producing the finest cycling clothing since 2004. Today we are in Col d'Isoard.
Where are we, Lionel?
We're on top of the Col d'Isoard with a fantastic view of the Alps here. I mean, it's majestic, it's breathtaking. It's the most it's the decisive day of the Tour de France, we think, unless the time trial in Marseille turns out to be decisive. We don't yet know because we don't...
Hedging your bets there.
Well, I am hedging my bet because there's 22 kilometres to go. The break is edging towards the bottom of the Col d'Isoard. There's about, a third of the peloton in the break today. 54 riders originally. It's now split into bits. Bora Hansgrohe have missed it, and there was quite amusing sight of them on the front doing a fair bit of chasing as a punishment, I assume. But as I speak now, AG2R, Le Mondial, Romain Bardet's team, they're doing a pretty good Team Sky impression on the front of the GC group at the moment.
And we're joined up here in perhaps one of the most beautiful bits of the Alps by François Thomazeau.
I've changed somewhat. No, it's Orlish anyway, isn't it?
Substitute for the moment. François's down the hill at the press centre.
Well, it's Orlish anyway, and I think Orlish French is better than François's, no?
Well, you know.
A very good accent, if you like.
That's wonderful. Orla, you've come out because the La Course was this morning. We were up here for that as well. We're producing a cycling podcast, Femina, which will come out at the start of next week. And we should mention La Course because it's a bold new dawn for women's cycling, if you like, although opinion a little bit mixed at the finish. But I think we saw a good race. It was won by Annemiek van Vleuten, chased by Lizzie Deignan. It was a good race, and it was a good crowd, you know, a lot of support, and we'll see them in a couple of days ride what they're calling the Chase in Marseille. A lot of intrigue around that, but I think it was a good event.
I think it was decent, and probably opinion is reserved as to how well it went or otherwise. Everyone was a little bit broken by the time they got up here to be in any kind of lucid frame of mind to say what they thought of it as an event as a whole, and it is only half of it for now. But it was interesting chatting to Ashley Milman-Passio, one of the riders, afterwards, and she was saying how she didn't like the feeling that they should be grateful for everything they've been given here, because it's been referred to as a gift very often by ASO. But it was a good race. A decent chunk of media came up here. And, you know, that's what, 4 hours ago. So it's been a long day for them, and they've made that decision to be able to miss the start of the men's race, that they could be here for the finish of the women's race. A good crowd up here as well. I think it went well. I enjoyed it. I preferred it to Paris at this stage because it felt more of a race of itself rather than a warm-up to the men's race, even though essentially it's pretty much the same thing. But the racing was good, and we saw a good, strong calibre of riding as well, which is a kind of showcase that you want, really, on the platform that we've been given for the women's race.
Well, it'll be interesting in the men's race here, because, you know, there were about 10 women in the lead group with about 5 or 6 Ks to go from memory, and, you know, we could have a situation here where there are 4 basically in that group. We'll see. What's the latest, Lionel? What's happening?
Well, the latest is that Alexei Lutsenko of Astana and Nicolas Edé of Cofidis are the two riders out in front. The lead is actually tumbling down between those two and the Chris Froome yellow jersey and GC favourites group. It's now under 5 minutes. It was 8 or 9 at one point.
It shows you how hard AG2R have been riding.
Well, it does. And they're certainly going to catch some of the riders from the big escape. But the question is whether the breakaway will get a chance to fight it out for the stage win, or whether Chris Froome will have his chance to try and win on the Col d'Isoard this afternoon.
And one thing to note, actually, I was told by someone in Team Sky that James Murdoch is on the tour today. Of course, the big cheese, le grand fromage of Team Sky. So he's in one of the team cars. Whether that will influence their racing tactics or not, but certainly that would be extra special to be able to celebrate with champagne tonight with James Murdoch in the room.
Michael Landa a stage win.
Well, I'm not sure what James Murdoch's tactical nous is like, really. I'm assuming he's not calling the shots in the sense that he can be calling the tactics on the road, but, well, we never know.
A la Tinkoff, maybe he'll start tweeting later on. Big Froome earns his big bucks, and he's... Tinkoff's been abusing Contador throughout this tour as well, even though he doesn't employ him anymore. Is that Steve Cummings on the front of the chasing group there?
Lionel. 3 weeks.
Yeah, that is Steve Cummings riding really quite hard there. But he's got a couple of... Well, he's certainly got Serge Pauwels in there, hasn't he? His Dimension Data teammate. Have they got anyone else up there in that group? 54 riders. I didn't memorise them.
No, but Serge Pauwels there. He's going very well, as he told me the other morning. And he is Orla's tip.
Well, he's been my tip for at least three stages now, because he keeps saying he's in really good form and he's going to pull something out of the bag. And he's been giving it a damn good go, hasn't he? But I'll maybe not tip him today, because otherwise that'll just jinx him again. But
well, let's watch what unfolds, and we'll reconvene here in a little while, and we will be joining up with Francois again later on. Orla, they're in the final kilometer. Barguil is looking decent for the stage. I think he's going to do it, isn't he?
Yeah, I mean, any more road and it looks like he could be caught, but he looks like he's going to do it now. And this is in front of a pantomime crowd as well. They're absolutely loving it. They're cheering, jeering, booing. It's brilliant.
French, I think, a lot of Colombians, as there always are. They've got two horses in this race. Darwin Atapuma has just been dropped by Barguil. Rigoberto Urán was the one that closed the gap to Chris Froome when he attacked, but Bardet looks to me like he's suffering now. It's easy to criticise, isn't it? But Urán, he's not Daniel Freiberg. Colleague just pointed out that, you know, he could win the Tour de France, Urán, without having ridden in the wind at all, other than in the time trials.
Yeah, disappointingly safe ride, I think, from Rigoberto Urán, for someone who, you know, we'd love to see animate the race slightly. An interesting move as well from Mikel Landa, a couple of kilometres to go. It looked like he was attacking, and it looked like he might have been trying to go for the stage win himself. He had a cursory touch of his earpiece, didn't he? Whether that was to check it was working, to check what the team orders were, but Froome's back on his wheel now. But it'd be interesting to see what Froome... I'm hoping to chat to him at the end of the stage, what he has to say about what the team orders were there, but no stage win for Mikel Landa.
It worked out for them, though. It seems to have worked out for them, and it's as you were at the top. Warren Barguil, what a tour he's had. He's won two of the best stages and almost won the other best stage in Chambéry.
And in the polka dot jersey as well. I mean, barring going for the overall GC, couldn't have asked for a better tour, really. And a fantastic way for the French as well to be celebrating the Queen's stage. It's
and
wonderful.
Here comes Bardet. There's still time bonuses on offer, and it looks to me like Froome is struggling a little bit. I think Bardet's got this. He's going to get third on the line. That's a little time bonus. Atapuma just held on. So third for Bardet on the stage. Well, will that change anything for tomorrow? Probably not.
Probably not, but it should do for Saturday. Froome could have really tied it up today.
I meant Saturday, sorry. I'm forgetting about tomorrow. Lionel.
Hello, Richard.
You've just been chatting about the stage.
Oh,
just finished.
That was fantastic, wasn't it? Warren Barguil, what a ride that was. I mean, he wasn't in any of the breaks today. He rode with the GC riders and finished it off like that. Sensational win for the King of the Mountains. Truly crowned the King of the Mountains on the Izoard here.
He's done a lot for that jersey in this tour.
He really has. I think he's restored... It's no longer the kind of plucky breakaway jersey, is it? The points system has changed that a little bit, but he has gone out and won that jersey fantastically well, and he's won two fantastic stages. But the race between the GC riders was... It bubbled, it didn't really boil over, did it? But probably because, well, the pace was pretty hot all the way up the climb.
Let's go and speak to some riders, shall we?
Hi, I'm Dave. I work in customer service at RAFA North America, and you are listening to the Cycling Podcast in association with RAFA.
The RAFA Cycling Club is the largest global community of its kind. Members share their passion for the road through rides, events, exclusive club kit and racing. Find out more at rafa.cc.
Evening all. Evening all. Francois, we're in a bar now, back in our, well, we're the place we're staying, Saint-Chaffrey, just up the hill from Briançon, and we've been reunited with Francois.
Yeah.
How are you? You had a nice day?
I'm fine, yeah. Did I miss you?
Yes.
Well, kind of.
Not sure about that.
No.
Well, listen, thank you to Rafa for sponsoring the cycling podcast, and we have very important news to deliver because the poll has now closed, and it was incredibly close. The poll for the final week, Pedlar de Charme, Warren Barguil, Alberto Contador, Tony Martin, and Michal Kwiatkowski were all in the running. There were over 2,500 votes cast, and it was so close. Warren Barguil, a late charge from him after today's stage win, and he and Contador were tied on 33%. But Twitter polls tells me that the winner is Alberto Contador.
Ah,
controversial photo finish.
Yeah. It was a photo finish.
Well,
yeah.
What a consolation prize for Alberto. I mean,
he'll be really happy.
Yeah.
I mean, he came to the tour with big ambitions, and he's going home with a Pedlar de Charme T-shirt
and a red number.
Woo. A red number.
Yeah,
I think he'll be pretty happy with that. Michal Kwiatkowski also staged a late charge and got up to 30%. We'll not mention Tony Martin.
It's almost as close as the Tour de France itself.
It is. Kwiatkowski threw away his sunglasses at one point. I think that earned him a lot of points. But Alberto Contador is the winner. I feel like we should probably give Warren Barguil one as well. And I think I will seek him out and try and do that. Although he is wearing another jersey as well. So listen, at the finish, well, we were at the finish and we spoke about what had happened, but we're keen to get Francois' reaction. We got a lot of interviews. We'll hear from the stage winner, Barguil, and others. But Francois, what was your reaction to this stage? Another fantastic day for Warren Barguil and for France.
Yeah, I mean, first of all, I'd like to say it was kind of a bit disappointed stage. Like most of these mountain stages, you know, placed at the very end of the tour. We had the Ventoux, l'Alpe d'Huez, and it usually, I mean, it's been kind of a Christian Prudhomme invention, and let's face it, it doesn't work. Today, for the GC, there was no real change. Okay, Romain Bardet took a couple of seconds off Uran, and is now second instead of third. So, actually, the only interest of those stages, if you look at them, is a Frenchman winning, like Thibaut Pinot won in L'Alpe d'Huez a couple of years ago, and now Warren Barguil won his second stage of the Tour. Of course, it's exciting. What the interesting thing is, I'd like to see what is going to happen with Barguil now, because the polka dot jersey has become very popular in France since the Richard Virenque days, and now the polka dot jersey has found another back to rest on, and is in many ways is much more, cute, clever. I hope Richard Virenque is not listening to that. And likable than Virenque used to be. So maybe we have a new French hero. It's a little bit early to say, what kind of an impact Barguil will have on French cycling. But he's got everything you need. He's young, he's cute, he's had his problems. He's the terrible crash. We talked about it already when they were training in Spain with all of the Sunweb team. He had a crash in Romandie. I mean, he's said what a hard time he had to before this Tour de France to make it back. So well, he's got everything required to become a hero, and well, even his kind of a childish enthusiasm at the finish was interesting, because he was saying, I'm not only over the moon, I'm on another planet. I really don't know where I am. The only thing I would like not to see is that he shouldn't stay too high for too long. I hope he gets his feet back on the ground quickly. But he's a Breton, so usually guys from Brittany are pretty down to earth. So
if he runs into Bernardino in the fields in Brittany, his feet will be back down earth,
yeah,
pretty
absolutely.
Sharpish.
But yeah, maybe a new French hero was born, on this Tour de France. Really, the future will tell, but he's got it all. Yeah, let's face it.
Francois, how do you think Romain Bardet will feel about that? I mean, forget about Thibaut Pinot, who's not in the race anymore, but these are the three great hopes of French cycling. Bardet obviously is has been the main challenger for overall, but Barguil is sort of the darling, isn't he, of French cycling now. Will Bardet feel his nose is out of joint a little bit?
I don't think Romain Bardet will ever be the darling of French cycling. In many ways, if we could make a lame comparison, it could be the Anquetil Poulidor thing, because Romain Bardet is more like the kind of intellectual, well-bred, calculative rider, whereas Barguil is very spontaneous. He's full of charisma. He's much more simple in many ways, and he's got panache. I know you like this word, so to all of you who don't know,
what's the French for panache?
just a quick one for you English speakers who don't know about it, who struggle with the feminine and the masculine. Panache is masculine. It's le panache. So
quel panache? You told me me a lesson this the other day.
Absolutely.
François.
So Barguil's got panache. I'm not saying Bardet hasn't got panache, because he's tried again today to attack a couple of times, but you can tell he's part of a long-term plan to win the Tour. Whereas Barguil is the product of another very interesting scheme. That's the Sunweb scheme. Since they started, almost 10 years ago now, as Skil Shimano and Giant Alpecin and now Sunweb, you can tell that what they've been trying to do with Dumoulin, with Barguil, and even with Michael Matthews now, who really seems to be even more at ease with that team than he was with Orica. You could tell that they've been trying to actually force and impose kind of spontaneity, their approach to the sport is very interesting, and Barguil is actually the product of this.
Well, I spoke to Ike Visbeek, the sports director at Team Sunweb at the finish. Orla, you spoke to Warren Barguil. Let's hear from them both now. First of all, Warren Barguil, the stage winner, and then Ike Visbeek.
Yeah, for me, it's mean a lot. It's I'm living in my dream. I can't believe I won on the top of the Isoa. I need a... At the start of the stage, I have a comfortable advantage for my Paul Cadot, and I was still scared because he can take the point on the first category climb on the last one, and actually at the end it was me who takes the 40 points, and it's just unbelievable. I can't believe.
And you really raced for this Paul Cadot jersey. How important was it to you to honour it in that way?
Yeah, for me it was really important at the end. Since I take it in the non-tour stage, and for me it was a big goal, the main goal of the tour. It's crazy. I have a lot of emotion during this tour. To lose for a few millimeters, 6 millimeters, I heard, and now to win one stage in sprints with the best guys in the world, and today to win alone on the top of Isoa. I can't believe. I really can't believe.
Does that feel like a lifetime ago?
What?
A lifetime ago, yeah, tellement longtemps.
Yeah. For me, it's really nice feeling back, because I won two stages in the Volta, and since this time it was really long time, with a lot of bad luck, a lot of crash, and now I'm back. that's a nice thing.
Now in my wildest dream, maybe, because we have a strong team, and with Michael Matthews, you have a very big potential rider, very talented and gifted rider, and with Warren we also have it. But with these guys, they didn't have the super big results yet. And in this Tour de France, a lot came together. Good teamwork, more experience, total dedication. Also, these two leaders helping each other. And that gives something extra when the guys get out of the bus, when you see your two team leaders, your sprinter and your climber, helping each other when it's necessary. That gives to everybody a boost, from the mechanics to the guys that work hard for the leaders.
What's clicked for Warren, because he's obviously a rider of huge promise. He had a difficult period maybe, but what's gone right for him for this tour?
No, I think this role that we went into the tour with less pressure, but go for stage wins and no GC pressure, was for him the right one, and he is already an offensive rider, and I think that was a very good way to start it. And now he has a little bit more confidence, and hopefully that will also make him more balanced. He's a very impulsive guy, and with this confidence that he gets from an ear, he will see the situations better in the future, and I think this is a start for a very good series from him.
Will he develop into a GC rider, or do you think this is something that will keep him more motivated? And I spoke to Ivan Speckenbrink the other day, he was saying he's a racer, you know, rather than a guy who maybe likes to ride the way you have to ride for a top 10 on GC.
Yeah, no, I think in a tour where there is not so much time trials kilometers, he can go for a real GC. And I think for a grand tour with too much time trial kilometers for his like, then I think this the way that we did it now, mountain jersey and most of all stage wins in the mountains are the best way to approach it. So I think that is he needs a course that fits him.
I'm sure you're not thinking next year, but you've got obviously Tom Dumoulin, Warren Barguil. How do you accommodate both of their all of their ambitions? Because we imagine, I guess, it's likely Dumoulin would come to the tour next year, and Michael Matthews as well, of course.
No, it's not difficult. We look at the course, and then who has the best chances, that's the guy we ride for.
So we were talking about Romain Bardet as well there, and I guess one of the talking points today was the tactics of AG2R, and tactics are always... Tactics only make sense with hindsight, don't they? I think ultimately it was going to come down to who was stronger, Chris Froome or Romain Bardet. And we sometimes overstate the role of tactics and a strong team. But for a lot of people watching today's stage, AG2R seemed to be doing Team Sky's job. They were riding very hard in the front. All it succeeded in doing was in eliminating one by one Romain Bardet's teammates. Not that they would necessarily have been able to help him later on the climb. But was it an effective tactic? It would have been had Bardet attacked and dropped Froome.
I think the problem was that all the AG2R riders, they went pop pretty much within 500 metres of one another, or even less. Whereas Team Sky, they managed to ride in much longer blocks and much stronger much later. AG2R lost one, then another, and then suddenly it was just Romain Bardet. And then Sky kind of muscled into the front and took over, a bit like, well, now the big boys are in town and we're going to wind it up. Kwiatkowski then did a huge turn, which brought him almost to a standstill. Well, it did bring him to a standstill. He stopped in the road. And then they still have Mikel Landa, who looked as good today as he's looked on any day in the tour, and almost looked like he was holding...
I saw him open his mouth today.
But he looked like he was holding back, really. I mean, could he have gone on and could he have maybe gained 40, 50 seconds and catapulted himself up to third? He's, in fact, up to fourth as it is. I think AG2R did a good job. It wasn't a terribly imaginative job, but that they impressed me, because you wouldn't necessarily have thought those riders, Pierre Latour, for example, earlier on, and then Villemoz. But then the ones that were left right at the end, I think Domon went quite early, didn't he? But then, you know, Bakalants was still up there quite late on, wasn't he? So I thought they tried it. But when the teammates started popping, it was just too far for Bardet to make his move at that point, I think.
And also, as you said during the stage line, as we were watching it, not quite sure what else they could have done, really. I mean, were they setting a pace faster than Team Sky would have done? Would they have just... I mean, they would have sat just behind Team Sky anyway and done essentially the same job, although with less exertion. But, you know, there aren't, as you say, we overplay tactics sometimes anyway. What else really could they have done?
It was always going to come down to who was the strongest man, Bardet or Froome. The only thing that might have worked for them was the card that Froome had to play, and which I felt he did play today, which was when Landa was off the front, Froome did not obviously help to chase him down, and it put the onus on the others to do that, because Landa was a genuine threat. And if Bardet had somebody else, Pierre Latour or somebody, who was up there in the top six and was an outside threat, then it would have been a very powerful, potent force for them.
The interesting thing about the AG2R tactics, it was a complete failure in my opinion, but in the same time, what's good about it is that they tried it, and they didn't try it the way other riders tried to tackle Sky. Sky seems so dominant that other riders have tried to surprise them, kind of guerrilla tactics, you know, like, oh, we're going to try an attack there, an attack here, and try to kind of break the balance and break the momentum of the Team Sky machine. AG2R have gone one step further. They're trying to challenge Team Sky at their own game. And it proves that they, even if they failed, the mere fact that they tried it proved that they have new confidence as a team. And they actually didn't build that team by buying the best riders in the field. They've kind of educated a whole generation of young riders to become part of the Bardet project, like Cyril Gauthier, Ben Gastauer, all these guys,
Alexis Vermoz.
I mean, all these guys have been really working hard for Bardet, and they've been with the team for a long time. They were part of the project. They're kind of progressing with Bardet, and Bardet at the end of the stage said he was very proud of the of his team because they'd been trying. Because he said, "We've moved one step further. It's not enough, right? But at least we've been trying that." Bear in mind that Bardet's best teammate Michael Scherel was not on the tour, and well, they're actually improving every year with a little bit of input from the outside. I know someone, you know, they signed Bakelands, maybe they can find some new strength, but they might in the future be a challenge for Team Sky.
But isn't that the whole point? The fact that they had a go, the fact that they looked good on TV for 20 minutes or half an hour, the fact that, you know, the AG2R brand, I'm not being overly cynical about it, but the AG2R jerseys were all there leading the Tour de France. Bardet then did have a couple of attacks. In the minds of the kind of the average viewer watching on TV, AG2R probably had a really good day today in their opinion. It didn't work because the riders trying it weren't strong enough to go to 3 kilometres to go. They were all popping at 6.5 kilometres to go or whatever. But you're absolutely right. It's a confidence game, isn't it? Before you can ride on the front like that, you've got to prove you can ride on the front like that. I know it sounds paradoxical, but that's kind of how it is. Team Sky don't just let you come in and have a go at it for a laugh, do they?
But bear in mind one thing: Bardet didn't succeed in his attacks, but Chris Froome didn't succeed either. And the interesting thing, it came to mind when I watched the end of the race, and you see the gaps with only 2 days left actually in the race. Well, it's very well. You've got Bardet is 23 seconds down, and you'll tell me Lionel Hurán is 29. Yeah, that's it. And actually, if you look at the gaps, now. You ask yourself the question, when did Chris Froome actually win the Tour? Well, it took 39 seconds off Bardet and 51 seconds off Hurán in the first stage. So Chris Froome probably won the Tour in Düsseldorf, which is amazing.
We could have all packed up and gone home in Düsseldorf.
Oh, but then we would have lost, you know, we would have missed out on so much, Richard.
The Cycling Podcast is supported by Science in Sport. Science in Sport, fueled by science.
Thank you to Science in Sport for sponsoring the Cycling Podcast. A reminder that you can get 20% off all your Science in Sport products at scienceinsport.com if you enter the code CPOD20. So we've just realised that we've wasted 3 weeks travelling around Belgium and France.
Luxembourg.
And Luxembourg, when the Tour de France was won on day one in Düsseldorf. Little did we know on that wet day.
Not yet. Come on. There's still this time trial to go. The gap is only 23 seconds to Bardet.
True.
29 seconds to Hurán. I don't want to wish misfortune on Chris Froome, but he will be thinking if a puncture or a chain falling off or any crash or any kind of problem in the time trial. It's not done yet. There's plenty to watch on Saturday afternoon.
Absolutely. Looking forward to it. It should be great, actually, with the start and finish in the Stade Orange. We're looking forward to that.
Yeah, if I have a little bit of advice to give to Chris Froome, the hill in the time trial course goes at the foot of what we call in Marseille La Bonne Mère, the Good Mother. It's the main church in town. And usually, if you want to avoid an ill fate, you go to La Bonne Mère, to the Good Mother, and you light a candle. So he might, you know, I really think someone from Team Sky should light a candle at the Bonne Mère.
Back in January, Team Sky hired someone to light that candle.
Probably.
Their
probably
day
right.
is on Saturday morning.
They reconned the candle lighting stage, yeah.
Marginal gains.
They've got 8 different types of matches, just in case.
Well, listen, for 3 weeks, Lionel, I don't think we've spoken a word to Chris Froome, but because Orla's a hitter, she's flown in, parachuted in here, and she spoke to Chris Froome at the finish today. We'll hear from him now, and then we'll hear from somebody who was probably the man of the match today, Michał Kwiatkowski, the Polish rider, former world champion. You know, you're talking about AG2R, Francois, and the, you know, Matthias Franks and the Cyril Gauthiers and these guys, good riders, but there is a Milan-San Remo winner riding on the front. And
you know, with Kwiatkowski, the first tour he rode back in 2013, I think it was, he finished pretty high up overall. He was in running for the white jersey, and he potentially is a guy who could do well in a grand tour. And that might be, you know, at the back of his mind, the way that he's riding here, that just proving how far he can go in the mountains, because he's still a young guy, he could develop. There's so much he can do. I mean, when you speak to Brian Holm, his former sports director, he still, I think, thinks that he's the most talented rider he's ever worked with, just about. Anyway, here is Chris Froome and then Michał Kwiatkowski.
Chris, many will say that you've effectively won the Tour de France today. What would you say to that?
I wouldn't say it's quite won yet. I mean, certainly I think the toughest part of the Tour is behind us with the Alps and the Pyrenees done now. I'm pretty happy to have got through the Alps much better than in previous years. I've always struggled in the Alps, so it's nice to have that one out the way now. But the team has just been fantastic. I mean, each and every one of my teammates was amazing and just buried themselves today to keep me in yellow. I think we're really looking forward to the time trial in Marseille now. Two guys in the top five and still the yellow jersey. I think it's still a close race, but we're in a good position.
I think pretty much the whole team is amazing, and I'm very thankful, you know, to the team that we're supporting each other so well. You know, Luke Rowe, Christian Knie, Sergio Renau, Vasil Kirienka, Mikael Neve, Mikael Landa, and Chris on the end. It's just amazing team spirit, and it's just so great to be in such a team. We just believe that we could even win the stage today. I know it was very difficult because Romain Bardet was, you know, under pressure, and I think congrats to him to finish in third place. I don't know who won Barguil. Yeah, so that was amazing for the French guys, and yeah, we're really happy that, you know, the stage went on that way, and we're looking forward for tomorrow and for the time trial. When you have that advantage in the GC and you know, Romain Bardet, Haru and Uran is trying to get some advantage before the time trial, it's just easier to control the pace of the peloton. And you know, it was very difficult when we lost the jersey, of course, and we were trying to push on the stage to Chambéry, I think the short one, and that was very difficult stage for us. We put everyone under pressure. And when we get the jersey back, it was just easier on us, because we could even, you see today, you know, AG2R was under pressure to win the stage, and we could easily sit just on the wheels, and then when moment came, we could ride our own tempo, and then that's how it is on the Tour. If you have a little bit of advantage, you can, you know, stay more calm and you know, you're not panicking. So
ironic, Lionel, isn't it, that our erstwhile colleague Daniel Freib, television's Daniel Freib, once famously described Kwiatkowski as a vanity signing, because he's proving anything but.
I think that comment has been misunderstood a little bit.
I think it was a fair comment.
But it was Dave Brailsford really proving that he could buy a rider like Kwiatkowski and then pretty much put him on, not the bench, but make him subservient to the team's wishes. I mean, in any other team almost, he would be, well, he could be riding here for GC, couldn't he? The way he's ridden these climbs, he's only 4 or 5 kilometres short, or not even that some days. Clearly, I think he was 11th that year, 2013. He's a racer as well. Remember, he got in the crosswinds on that stage, that amazing stage that year. He's won the world title. He's won Milan-San Remo. You know, while he's at Sky, he might be the next one to have a crack at the Giro or the Vuelta. Or, I mean, is he going to get a chance at the Tour de France? I mean, they've got they've got several riders who all want that role, don't they? And at the moment, Chris Froome with, well, this could be 4 wins in 5 years, there's no vacancy at the moment.
Which raises, maybe it's a point we'll come back to before the end of the tour, because it's a tricky one, and I just want to suggest it. You heard about the suggestion by a would-be UCI president that a salary cap be imposed on teams. Obviously, what you just described about Kwiatkowski, or in the past, Poisson-Hagen, or Leopold Koenig, or Landa, maybe the way to avoid that would be to impose a salary cap. I don't know whether it's a good idea or not, but you know, it's been suggested, so maybe we'll discuss it another time.
The guy we haven't discussed much today, Rigoberto Urán, who looks a solid bet for the podium after today. Urán, Daniel, again, I mentioned this earlier, he said that, you know, he could win the Tour de France still, having had his nose in front only for the length of time that he passed Warren Barguil and Chambéry. But today, when Froome attacked after Mikel Landa, it was Urán really that brought him back and looked strong. But he's not attacked. Now, it's dead easy to be critical of that. It's not being critical of it. It's just when you're sitting watching it, it's easy to say, why don't you attack? Of course, he's probably on his limit.
He looks so good reacting, but he doesn't look like he wants to prompt anything himself.
Well, he maybe doesn't want to risk the podium.
Of course. I mean, he's in a position where, you know, it'll be the result of his career. You know, it might be impossible for him to be in this position again. Who knows? But the thing about him today was he slipped down one place because Bardet got the time bonus. But you'd still think he's favourite to, in the time trial, climb back up to second place overall. So in terms of being pragmatic, he's ridden the perfect race. But I guess what we want to see is the people who've got a chance to win take that chance to win, and he's not done that. But I don't necessarily blame him for
no,
that.
And in trying to take the chance to win, he may well lose the podium. I spoke very briefly to his teammate Andrew Talansky at the finish. Here's what he had to say, Andrew Talansky.
It'd be huge. I mean, nobody from this team has ever been on the podium of the Tour de France. Slipstream Sports organization. Now, you know, Cannondale Drapac, it would be... it would be tremendous, and it's looking pretty good for that.
Yeah, well, what's it been like for you? You had an important role today, of course, every day, but what's it been like to be riding for Rigo here?
That's nice. He's a really good guy, easy to work for, pretty relaxed, which makes it a pleasure to help him out.
So that was Andrew Talansky. It would be, as he said, a huge, huge result for that team, a team that Jonathan Vaught has told us repeatedly has one of the lowest budgets in the World Tour, a team that apparently has a new sponsor for next year, a media company, I'm told, but we don't know who. And I'm not sure when, if that's been signed yet or when it's going to be announced. But they seem to have, the future seems to be secure.
It's a major media company, we believe. Is that right?
I just said that, Lionel.
Oh, sorry.
It's a loud bar. It's a loud bar. Maybe you can't hear me.
I was just looking for the opportunity to tell my joke. So make my witty comment.
What's
about
that again?
This is going to be Team Alta Vista Drapac or Team Ask Jeeves Drapac. Cutting edge media company coming into cycling.
Maybe it's a cycling podcast.
Who knows? Yeah.
Maybe we're going to sponsor a World
huge,
Tour team.
Yeah, huge media
right.
company.
Why not?
That's us.
It's been a good month.
Well, two of their riders have won Pedlar de Charme. I mean, the conspiracy theorists will say we're the obvious candidates to take over that 15 million euro a year sponsorship. Well, and thanks to all the friends of the podcast who signed up this month.
Coming back to Urán, I think it's a little bit unfair to say he didn't attack, because if you take the three guys who are probably going to finish on the podium, none of them really attacked in significant fashion. But they tried. Well, it's probably the one who tried the most, and well, the result was he won a stage. But Froome didn't attack the way he used to. Well, every time he tried, he failed. So Urán did not attack, but in a way they were all very conservative. The only one who attacked, you know, was probably Warren Barguil. And so it's funny that we have on this tour two kinds of riders: the one riding conservatively for the GC, and the ones going for it, like Warren Barguil or Michael Matthews
or Daniel Martin.
Or Daniel Martin. Well, Daniel Martin was not rewarded because he is so, you know, unlucky at times and probably rides more on instinct than on you know, how could I say, strategy. But actually the most exciting riders in these two were not the ones in the top three, which is... well,
And this, as I spoke about with Aki Vispeek, is the great dilemma for Warren Barguil, whether he, you know, takes a totally different approach and becomes more conservative and more calculating and more patient in his riding. You know, being able to ride in the way he has. And as Lionel said earlier, the way that he won that stage was absolutely fantastic today. And he comes out the tour as one of the real shining stars, you know. Forget about the podium almost. Warren Barguil is one of the men of the race. We should wrap things up there.
We should. We've had a 13-hour day today, Richard, and we've only had a small stolen breakfast.
Yeah,
and a ham
literally
and cheese
a
sandwich.
Literally a stolen breakfast.
We went to a cafe, really, and stole their breakfast.
We did. We literally
scavenged the remains.
We scavenged the remains. We Lionel suggested
slices of bread between the lot of us.
A lot of Nutella, though, Arla.
A lot of Nutella.
You're ambitious with the Nutella.
Yeah.
But you suggest we're going to forage for lunch. We didn't do that. We did actually manage to get lunch. But anyway, it has been a long day. We've all got quite red faces. And
to be honest,
apart from Francois.
To be honest, the press buffet was not what was okay, but not so good. So he didn't miss much.
Okay, that's a relief. Well, listen, that's all for tonight. Thank you, Francois.
Bonsoir.
Thank you. Thank you, Lionel.
Thank you, Richard.
And thank you, Arla.
Thank you very much. You.